Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the Vigilance Press podcast. My name is James Dossey. I'm the owner and publisher of Vigilance Press. And tonight I have two of our energetic contributors for Vigilance Press products to talk about some upcoming projects that we have. I have Rick Jones. Rick, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
It's good to hear you. Now, Rick has written for us a project... A supplement for Mutants and Masterminds called Six Gun, which is a team of supervillains that we'll be talking a little bit more about later. We'll kind of get into more detail about your work in the industry before that. But we've also got the artist for Six Gun with us tonight, Alex Williamson. Alex, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Hey, it's great to have you on the show. This isn't the first time I've heard your voice, but I think it might be the first time that the audience has, or at least this audience. Tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you been working as an artist?
Well, I did a little bit of freelance work many years ago, but really I just started doing full-time freelance artwork just 4 months ago. Mm-hmm. That's when I finally quit the day job and just decided, screw it, I've got a nice little comic book gig, and I picked up another a game gig as well, and then I just kept on searching for more work. So just 4 months, really, that's basically it.
Awesome.
Been drawing a lot longer than that.
Yeah, clearly. So that people don't think I've got on some guy who's going straight from, you know, art from his refrigerator to doing art for Vigilance. We actually, you might want to, let's see, you've got a webcomic called
Brass
Falcon. Mm-hmm. Where is that located so people can look it up real quick?
That's www.brassfalcon.com.
Okay. And you've also posted some of your art on the Atomic Think Tank, so our Mutants and Masterminds fans will know to link there. Yep. We actually have some of your artwork on the VigilancePress.com website, which is brand new as of this recording. So if you haven't checked it out yet, anyone listening, the new website, www.VigilancePress.com, we have a couple of galleries that you can check out, including a bunch of Alex's artwork is now popping up there in some of the different projects that we've got him working on, including the Beacon City Metas project. Now, the Metas project was originally called Stark City Metas, and Dan Hauser, who is suffering from a sore throat and couldn't join us tonight, he's expanding the scope of his plans for the Stark City brand. So rather than just, you know, continue with branding it that way, we decided that since I was going to publish the book, we were going to go ahead and just rebrand it with, you know, the Vigilance Press setting. But the basic principle is still the same. We have about 30 people who have signed up as of this first issue. We're going to have probably about 15 of those make it into the first issue. Basically, we're still waiting for some people to send in their write-ups, but fortunately Rick Jones sent his in a while back. And that was actually before he signed on to do some work for me on a consulting basis. But the basic premise was people paid a certain amount of money and they got to have their characters included in a compendium. And we're going to publish the first volume as soon as we get the artwork finished and the layout done. And it'll be available for print on demand. Anyone who signed up and had their characters in there will be able to get the PDF for free. If you want to buy the print on demand, that'll be the same price for everybody. But once we get the first couple of issues out, we're going to start looking at what people want from that series and if people still want to keep contributing, or we might change it into like a regular kind of thing. We'll see how well it sells and how well it does. But the basic idea was based on Dan Hauser's Hero Pack books, which were published for Icons. And since they were so successful, we decided to give it a try for Mutants and Masterminds. We've been working on the project for a while. There's been a bunch of false starts, mainly due to my having picked up Vigilance Press. and having to split my time to too many things. Now that I've had wonderful artists like Alex and Yad and some other fine people joining me here at Vigilance Press, I've had a lot more opportunities to start getting more projects finished, which is a good thing. Speaking of projects finished, Alex just turned in the last of the artwork for Six Gun, which Rick Jones is writing for us. Rick, let's talk a little bit about Six Gun. Actually, let's start talking about Rick. You've done freelance work in role playing games before, right?
I've done a lot of work in the past for White Wolf, mm-hmm. Mostly for the Werewolf, various iterations of it. Mm-hmm. I was lucky enough to be one of the contributors to their adventure pulp RPG. As well as some other things that haven't seen the light of day for other game companies.
That's always
and yeah. Well, I'm gonna recycle them and use them in other stuff, maybe even for Vigilance.
Okay.
We're
all about the green earth here. We want to recycle. Yes.
I read The Octoberman and I was like, this is really awesome. I want to see if I can do something with these people, because The Octoberman just completely blew me away. And the rest is history, basically.
Yeah, The Octoberman, for people listening, you probably have heard that name a lot since I joined, because it was the first product that it was the second product we published since I took over, but we've published it like three times now, maybe four, just going through different iterations, the Icons version, the print-on-demand version, and so forth. But it's been kind of our test baby. It was also written by Jack Norris, who's become a really good friend of mine, and he's just an incredible powerhouse of a writer. He's just constantly putting out a tremendous amount of work. But the Black Chapter book is actually getting a sequel soon. We've got Alex working on the cover to that sequel right now, as soon as we get the finished inks, I'll post those up in the preview gallery for Black Chapter. But when you first signed on, you basically came in with that kind of a resume, and also I think Jack had mentioned, you know, give this guy a look because he's asking about it. And I at the time I was kind of looking at Do Vigilance as a very specific kind of niche. A theme for each of the issues. The first issue was, of course, The Octoberman, which in my mind was a supervillain team that was, you know, they were a mercenary team, very utilitarian for the GM. There's somebody that could appear in just about any scenario, and we just wanted a mystic-themed supervillain kind of team. And I said, you know, the next kind of team of villains that I wanted something that was very military, because I just put down something by Greg Rucka. I don't remember what it was I was reading, but everything he's got has that kind of gritty realism to it. And I'm like, I want something like that with that gritty realism. And I pitched that to Rick. How did you kind of turn that into the idea of doing like all cyborgs?
Well, to be honest, my thoughts were from before we talked was, you know, what's something that's, you know, far away from a mystical super team and supervillain team. And so I thought, well, high tech villain team. And I thought about, mercenaries, and that kind of led me down towards a dark, almost Shadowrun type mercenary team of cyborgs that, you know, instead of super mysticism, it's super technology.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I really liked about that team was that there was a cybernetic team that Green Ronin had released as part of their threat reports. But one of the things I liked about this one is that it had a very different feel to that team. I mean, they're a very different set of powers and abilities. What really clicked for me, I was sitting there kind of sketching up ideas, and Yad and I had come up with some cool ideas and even finished one of the pieces that's going to be used in the final product. But it wasn't until I met Alex and we started talking and he started putting the pencils down where I really started getting excited about the visuals, because, you know, he's got this great sense of the weaponry and the mechanics and the cybernetic aspects to it. So Alex, were you the kind of kid who was just drawing guns in his high school books all day long, or what?
The first toy that I remember playing with wasn't really a toy. It was my father's plastic model kit of an F4 Phantom.
Awesome.
I was four. I remember that, and I remember a job that I had in New York City, and I was drawing guns and all kinds of weird, like, funky stuff, and somebody actually looked over my shoulder, looked at what I was drawing, and said, "Are you a mercenary? What are you doing?" I've been drawing guns and fun tech stuff like that for a long, long time, and I got into manga and anime a long time ago as well, and one of my biggest influences was Masamune Shirow, which, you know, James, you and I talked about that for a bit, and, you know, of course, he pulls from all kinds of, like, you know, funky cyber stuff, and it's just, like, all the junk that I have in my head is usually revolving around exactly that type of world. But then I also love the superhero aspect too. So, yeah, when you told me, like, you're doing a cybernetic bad guy team, like, that's ridiculous. That's right up my alley. So, yeah, thank you for the kudos, by the way. Really, it was almost like too easy for me to, like, just churn that stuff out, because it's what I draw all the time anyway.
Yeah, it was actually pretty scary how quickly, you know, when I first met Dan Houser, it was interesting because he was basically doing a quick fundraiser, and he asked everybody on, I think it was RPG.net, to send in, like, a certain amount of money and a description of their character, and he'd be doing character illustrations. And I said, you know, I was at the time kind of struggling to get by on my own art, mainly because I'd fallen out of certain habits, and I wanted to kind of get back into it, but I wanted to share the load by doing just one job. I just wanted to do the pencils at that time. And I sent him some of my pencils, and he came back to me with a finished piece of artwork in about 2 hours and said, "Dude, we have to talk."
Yeah.
And I was like, I've never seen anyone move that fast. It was like meeting Dan Houser all over again when I started getting back the pencils for Six Gun and some of the other projects we've had you working on, because it was just amazing to me. I turned over, like, just the other day when I got you onto the Metas project, I sent you descriptions for, like, 6 or 7 characters, and I wake up the next day and they're in my email box, all of them. I'm just like, how is this happening? He's like, what is he, Doctor Who? Does he have a time machine? What's going on here? I really like the energy of your stuff. Very polished, very professional, very comic booky. And that's something that I think, in a lot of respects, is kind of missing from a lot of different... I'm not going to point fingers at anyone, but just in general, I think superhero role-playing games tend to have role-playing game artists as opposed to comic book artists. And yep. It's really nice having that comic book style in a comic book project. So I really, really think I'm really happy to have found an artist who's got that nailed, and that's really helpful to me as a publisher. But the speed doesn't hurt at all.
They say you want to the proper formula for being a freelancer is be fast, be fun to hang out with, and do good work, and then you are the ultimate freelancer. And that is my goal. That's my goal at this point. I need to hit all three. I tell you, the only thing that ever slows me down is sometimes I'm a schmuck and I just basically get too much work in. But really, I haven't been overloaded yet in the time that I've been doing this stuff solo, and I think I'm trying to be smart. I haven't said no to you yet, but I know that if I wind up getting like slammed with a bunch of stuff, I'm going to say, hey, I need some time. But otherwise, I mean, honestly, I could keep up this pace for indefinitely.
Right.
I'm doing character drawings. There's
you may regret saying that.
Make me regret it. Make.
Okay. I challenge accepted. But seriously, one of the things that really came together for me about Six Gun was when we started looking at the print on demand requirements, and once we got all of that done together for Octoberman, the special edition that we did to get the page count, I realized that I needed to start expanding the Duke Vigilance line by a few pages to kind of really hit that sweet spot. And so I've been going back to the authors like Rick, and one of the things I did with Rick is I said, well, what would make this project more useful? So talk a little bit about both the characters and the content that goes beyond the characters themselves, if you would, for a minute.
Sure. Well, the characters, I kind of started with my head in that Greg Rucka space, along with a lot of John Ostrander's Suicide Squad and Gail Simone's Secret Six in my head. And so I wanted a bunch of bad people who are going to do bad things, but in some ways you kind of root for them because they're not out to rule the world or impress death. They're just out to stay alive and get paid and find some small bit of happiness or whatever in a world where everybody's out to get them, and so they really are forced to rely on each other, much like in the Secret Six, where everybody's out to get them, so they have to watch each other's backs.
In a world where everyone is out to get you.
Right.
That's all these blue-collar villains, That's kind of what they are.
Yeah. One of the things that I liked was that he kind of, when he was giving us the first few characters, like Marauder, he pitched us as like, I want this to look like this particular actor. Or, things like that kind of grounded the art in some form of reality that I could easily just pass over to another artist. And totally nailed it. I mean, I love the sketch for Marauder. Again, this art is up at the Vigilance Press website. You can check it out under the galleries. Just highlight the black chapter. The Six Gun setting. And it may be under the Do Vigilance. So if you mouse down to Do Vigilance, it'll pop out the titles that are under Do Vigilance. Then you can mouse over to Six Gun. But the artwork for the line art is up, and I've got some of the finished colored pieces. My friend Yad Mui is, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing his last name right, but he's a local friend here in Atlanta, friend of mine that I've known for like 10 years or more, and ever since I started going to anime cons. And I asked him to help out with the artwork because he's really good at doing the mecha type stuff. And I really wanted these guys to have kind of a mechanical, fun look to them. And then when we brought Alex in, the fusion of their art styles was really interesting. It was something that I wasn't really expecting, but seeing how it's coming out, I'm really excited by how it looks. So that's kind of cool.
I mean, seeing my stuff colored is just weird because, I'm not usually a color guy. I do colors occasionally, but I'm usually just the black and white guy. So whenever I see anything colored by somebody else, I'm like, wow, that's crazy. So yeah, I can't wait for people to actually see this stuff. And I post on a couple art forums. I actually have to post his stuff, or links to his stuff, those colored pieces to see what the rest of the gang thinks at the other art forums as well, because they're always freaking out whenever they see anything of mine colored by someone. So it's the same way as me. It's just so alien to me that, you know, I look at it and I'm like, that doesn't even look like my art anymore. That's crazy.
Well, it's gorgeous. I mean, I've got Marauder as my desktop wallpaper right now.
No. Fantastic.
Oh, that's great.
So we've got the actual, let's see, six characters, right, for the main team. Oh, and I do want to name drop one more artist. Jesse Justice was kind enough and had the time of day to do the logo for me. I asked him really quickly. I kind of sketched up an idea for a patch, and he cleaned it up and did it in Illustrator for us, so Yad could kind of stamp it in to his artwork and use it as a brush, basically, in Photoshop. And so we've got those really cool badges for the characters, and that kind of gave them that legitimate feel. But we've got the six main characters. You've got Marauder, Camo. We have the artwork up for her as well. And let's see.
I think you have Deadeye up, don't you?
I believe I have Deadeye, and I don't think I have Echelon up. I can't remember now. But we've got the art back for everybody, so I should start posting some more of that soon. But
yeah, what I've seen is gorgeous. I can't wait to see the rest of it in color.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how the team works.
Okay. Well, the backstory behind them is that five of them started off as mercenaries working for this large evil military contractor, which is if like Roxxon Oil in the Marvel Universe is, you know, evil version of Exxon, these guys are the evil version of Blackwater.
Mm-hmm.
They have a nice, happy, we just do legitimate, you know, security work front, and then in the back room they're doing all kinds of horrible human experimentation, and the first five of them were all soldiers working for them who got blown up in some way, and the company scooped up their bits and stapled on as much cyberware as their bodies could take, ranging from like Camo looks completely normal to Headcase, who is literally a brain in a big evil robot tank.
Headcase was a lot of fun to draw, by the way.
Yeah,
that's the only one
he's
contributed heavily to as far as the drawing part goes. But that was basically me and Yad kind of sitting down at the trading turns in the same chair and just sketching up ideas. But that one, I mean, and then he took it home and made it look awesome. But
I actually used Headcase's design. James, I think I already mentioned this to you, but you know, for the rest of the cybernetics on all the other guys, I tried to incorporate, because I figured, you know, the big company, they're going to reuse tech from one cyborg to another. So Marauder's arms have some similarities to Headcase's arms.
And, yeah, they've all got similar, like, leg boot attachments.
Yep, exactly. And actually, Marauder's legs look more like Headcase's, but Echelon and Deadeye both have the same boots and pants and everything. So, you know, I wanted their kit to look similar. And you know, they basically, I'm thinking of them as a real, like, you know, military unit. And they have, you know, uniforms. So, sort of. Not really, but, you know, close enough. But, yeah, I wanted to incorporate that into the actual look, because the way you described it, they were, you know, made to work as a team, and you know the rules you wrote for them are just fantastic. You know, with their cybercoms and all that. Well, anyway, you get to that. I'll shut up now.
So we've spoken about three of them.
Oh,
we've
you there?
Camo, Rick still
did
there?
I lose you?
Yeah,
yes,
okay. I'm here.
So we talked about Headcase, who's the big tank one. Tell us a little bit about Echelon. He's one of my favorites.
Echelon is their hacker type. He was basically caught by the evil corporation, and they put all kinds of nasty stuff in him and said, well, you're going to keep working for us, or we'll push this button and your head will explode. And he kept on poking into stuff he shouldn't, and which led them to sending him down to the chop shop to get all sorts of things implanted. And what he's got is a bunch of little robot drones that he can they're little summoned creatures, basically little robots that carry machine guns of death. And you know, it's like the we're seeing about in the news all the time, you know, these unmanned drones, piloted remote control it. He's doing that, except he's doing it all with his brain.
Right.
So, you know, his guys, the bugs are flying around, providing covering fire and, you know, aiding the rest of the team and, generally making a nuisance of themselves.
And then there's Deadeye, who one of my favorite pieces of artwork, by the way. I love the way he looks, and I've seen the color flats on him already. One of the things I did before I turn it back over to you guys, one of the things I decided as kind of a, I guess you call it an executive decision. There's my action movie reference. I wanted to kind of pull each character out with a different color scheme, despite the fact that they do have certain uniform elements to them. So you'll notice when you start seeing the other pieces of artwork that each character kind of has its own, still military looking, but different color scheme to it. To kind of, you know, if you saw all the pieces on the table, like if you're using the standees that will be included in the product, you'll easily be able to, from 6 feet away, tell which character is which. But on the same token, they all have a really cool, realistic look to the artwork. But for me, Deadeye was one of those things that just screamed, you know, sci-fi as far as the way he looks. I love the gun.
Yes, his gun is great, and players will hate it. he is a sniper. And thanks to his cybernetic eyes and his big gun, he's going to be the guy on top of a building 7 blocks away taking pot shots at the characters who, and generally making their lives miserable while they're trying to deal with the group that's right there in front of them, you know, punching and shooting at them. There's also this guy, and they have no idea where he is, firing a rail gun at them, and it'll hurt.
So, Alex, you back?
Yes, okay. I am. I don't know what happened, but it's all better
now. Just a little hiccup there. All right.
Yep.
So, one of the things I really liked, I was talking about your artwork. I think you dropped off at the time, but I really like the sci-fi look to Deadeye's gun. Do you want to let people in on, or do you want to see if people can? I guess we can see if people can guess what movie you were inspired by, or do you think it's close enough that they'd still recognize it?
But Deadeye's gun?
Yeah, or was that more of just your own?
That's just out of my head. What movie were you thinking of?
Well, I think when we were talking about it, we were originally talking about Eraser, weren't we? But I guess I haven't seen it in a long time, so I don't remember if it actually resembles it or not.
No, well, you and I were talking about Eraser when I was describing the guy.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I actually just I just kind of came up with that out of nowhere. I'm very used to designing you know, guns of my own, and It's also a skill that I tell any aspiring artist to pick up immediately. You know, go pick up some gun magazines and learn how to draw guns the right way and understand how guns actually work, because then your art just, you know, becomes 10 times better, because every single thug in a comic book is going to wield a gun at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as you start understanding that, then it's real easy to make you know, really cool looking sci-fi guns out of nowhere. And again, Shiro influence there, you know, the guns that he designed for Ghost in the Shell are just fantastic. Mm-hmm. And you can take like regular real guns and make them into science fiction guns. Like all the guns from the original Star Wars films, they're all real guns with just stuff added to them. Like Han Solo's pistol is a broom handle Mauser,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so all they did was just, you know, slap on some funky stuff and say, it's a blaster pistol. So that's pretty much what I do most of the time. Marauder's assault rifle, I figured a real assault rifle might not fit his giant cybernetic hand. So I made kind of a fake one, but I pulled from existing stuff. So it's really kind of a cross between an M4 with an M203 grenade launcher and a little bit of AK-47 in there and some Heckler and Koch parts. And all of their submachine guns are just HK-MP7s. And I think Camo's pistol. I think Camo's pistols are just USP-45s. It's like a civilian version of a SOCOM, but it's got the slide underneath. So, yeah, it's mostly just real guns. Deadeyes is the only one that's really kind of freaky, but the only strange thing about it that differs from a real gun is it doesn't have an ejection port because it's a rail gun. So, I don't know. Fun to draw.
Yeah, I mean, what I love is being able to look and recognize things from, action movies or even guns I've fired on unlucky occasions. So actually getting to see, the realism you worked in there was really, it was worth that alone was like bringing you on board. I mean, you know, you bring so much more to the table, but I was like, yeah, he was exactly, you know, one of the things that I keep telling artists that ask me, you know, can I get work with you or whatever? And it's like, I'm always looking for a new professional artist, but I'm very specific about who I assign to a given project because I want to have the right artist for the right job. And you were perfect for this one.
You know, I gotta mention also the other RPG job or, you know, a game job that I have. I work for Catalyst Game Labs and I do illustrations for Battletech and Shadowrun.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's just like the perfect fit again for Six Gun because, you know, Six Gun is just a superhero villain version. I mean, Rick even mentioned it. It's a little more Shadowrun like. With the tech and the cybernetics and everything, but that's exactly what I do for those guys. In fact, with the Battletech stuff I've been doing, they don't even have me drawing mechs so much as taking their models that nobody even really thinks about, the tanks. They love sticking me on tank drawings because I take their goofy little models that just don't have the detail that the big mechs have. Because it's tiny, and I add tons of detail. So I'll throw on, like, pintle-mounted machine guns because I know what they're supposed to look like, and I'll put on proper hatches, which aren't on the models because they're so itty-bitty.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just tweaking over, you know, these, you know, crazy things I'm doing with their tanks, so I just enhance the tech. But that said, I love working on this Metas project as well because I love standard superheroes, and I was a huge fan of the official handbook of the Marvel Universe. And I know it, like, cover to cover. And I would look at all those character drawings, and, of course, that's where I was getting lots of ideas besides the actual comics. I would look at the character drawings and go, ah, cool, so this artist drew a cape this way. I'll draw it that way as well. And so, yeah, I pull from that, too. Yay.
Yay, cool. So, let's see, the last member I think we haven't talked about yet was Spot.
Yeah, Spot. I love Spot.
Spot's great.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see what Yad does with the colors on that one.
Yeah. For the flats that I've seen, he went with kind of like a reddish look because we were trying different ideas because we've got this... Well, tell us a little bit about who and what Spot is before I get into that.
Spot is kind of a prototype test animal for the next generation of the evil corporations, super mercenary types. He's basically they took the DNA from all sorts of predator animals and kind of stirred them in a blender and out came this, you know, enormous, vaguely dog, cat, alligator, shark looking thing that you know, once they were done, they're like, okay, well, we can go on and start doing more you know, more versions. The folks in that were putting together the team that would be Six Gun were like, well, hey, we can stick some of our cyberware in it, and now they've got a kind of a hunting dog, a canine unit, except it's just a science fiction nightmare of a beast. All and right. They named it the other five named it Spot, just, you know, instead of, like, you know, Kill Machine or something, because they thought that would be funny, and it just stuck.
Alex, good to have you back. Rick was just telling us about Spot. Now, he, you know, we gave you the description of this animal being this chimera, these elements from different animals, and you just went crazy. Where did you get the inspiration for that freakish creature that you wound up with? I love it, by the way. It's just insane.
Well, thank you. I gotta say, the first thing that always enters my mind when you're gonna combine crazy creatures is I have to include cephalopod, because cephalopods are the most, you know, that's a squid, cuttlefish, octopus. So it has cephalopoidan eyes. They're huge, and each eye has its own binocular vision because it's got a really weird iris and whatever. And so that's always like the first thing that pops into my head. Like, how can I include some type of like squid or octopus thing? And then I always want to combine things that are supposed to be furry with things that have scales.
Well, Spot is gorgeous. I can't wait to see him in color.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely wanted some lizard features in there. So if you notice the hinge of its jaw and the web of flesh between its upper and lower jaw, but then its huge teeth as well. And then I threw in, it's not even in his power set, but I threw in little venom shooting spots in his teeth. So if you ever want to enhance that character, I gave him venom glands. Basically, I just kind of went completely nutso and just kept on adding funky stuff to it. And I know that, Rick, you had this idea where, you know, his name was going to be Spot because he would have spots. Well, you know, since the name of the company is Ops, mm-hmm. I figured they would, you know, it's their property. What do you do with your property when it's an
animal? You brand it, sure. Okay.
So they put a big O for Ops on his flank, and so that happened to make a spot. So even in black and white form, it still was very indicative of, like, you know, his name and, you know, the ownership and where it came from. And, yeah, otherwise, mostly it's a cat, lizard, octopus, snake.
One of the fun things about that particular character is that his origin ties into something that that Jack was writing, and Jack goes, "Can I please make it the same company?" And I'm like, "Of course." So something that else that we'll be talking about later when I have Jack back on the show, maybe next time. Alex is also doing the artwork for that, but I'm not sure if you if I mentioned that he had the same background, but. There's a character called Apex, and that's all I'll say. But Alex has already turned in the art for, or at least the pencils on that one, which I was really happy with.
Yeah, I remember reading that in the description of Apex.
Mm-hmm. All right. So one of the things that I really wanted to do once I realized that. The page count on the standard Due Vigilance products was going to be just shy of what we were looking for in terms of getting a print on demand met, was that we needed to add some additional content. And I basically asked Rick, hey, can you give me a couple more pages of stuff? And you came up with like five more characters and a whole essay on private military companies. Talk a little bit about what kind of research you did and you know, how you think this will be helpful to GMs?
Well, the research I did on private military companies is, you know, a lot of, you know, these companies are out there. They have actual websites, and we'll talk about their things. There are web pages for you know, people who are interested in working for these companies. So I just, you know, looked and saw what was there, and it was some fascinating research.
Yeah, I was really happy to see the details you came up with actually kind of made me mad. But as far as, you know, what's going on in the real world, but we had to kind of tell what's really happening, and then suggest to people how they can, you know, how these can easily be turned into plots for their games. But that was kind of the enlightening part for me, because just actually seeing, you know, what's really going on and how much money people are spending on private military firms and so forth. That was really interesting info.
Yeah, I mean, the backstory for some of the members of the team were, you know, based on reality, that they were, you know, highly trained, you know, Navy and Army and such folks who were basically told, yeah, we can pay you 10 times as much, and we don't worry about, you know, pesky codes of military conduct or anything like that. And, you know, there's a real problem in the military with retention, because these private contractors are saying, hey, come work for us, we'll pay you a lot more.
Yeah, that was really interesting to me. You know, it hadn't occurred to me how, you know, simple it is essentially for a private contractor to start recruiting. And, you know, basically what they're offering. And it kind of frustrates me that what they offer is, you know, in so many ways more appealing to our own armed forces than you know, what America can offer. But what I really liked was the additional characters. Let's see, with Copperhead, the Night Witch, some of the other characters. So you've basically got a support team for Six Gun and some connections for them. And have you seen the artwork for those characters yet? Because
yes, okay. I have, and yeah. I just hate to gush because it sounds like I'm a total shill, but yeah, the art is great. The Night Witch, the one you mentioned, is the name of a pilot who has a bit of fancy science fiction aircraft that you know, she's the one who will drop them off in some horrible third world country to do something bad and then pick them up later. She is a retired Russian pilot who also got lured by fast money, though she was lured away by the Russian mafia. And I kind of had this this image of this mean, crusty old lady who is nonetheless flying this top of the line jet.
Yeah, oh, I was almost surprised with the Russian aspect that you didn't drop the name Baba Yaga in there somewhere.
Well, the Night Witch, is named after an actual World War II all female Russian Air Corps that was famous for, you know, they had the oldest and slowest machines, and yet they had amazingly good results, and they just took every, you know, they were able to turn the slowness also gave them more maneuverability, so these faster planes are just zipping right by them, and they're able to, you know, do all kinds of aerobatics that that the fast planes just can't do because they're going so fast.
So, as an alternative, one of the things I like about these characters is they have so much personality. They could easily be, you know, you could easily just kind of turn the dial a little bit, and they would easily be heroes or anti-heroes or good models for player characters if you wanted to play in kind of a scenario like that. Although you'd probably want to tone down their point levels. a bit.
Yeah. Originally they were a little more lower power, just because I was kind of comparing them point wise to the October Men, and you told me no, go nuts. These guys need, you know, they should have more points in vehicles or in various skills that they, you know, logically should have, that I had kind of shaved down because it was easy to save points there. And so, yeah, they're expensive.
One of the things I think I said, because when I originally pitched the group to you, I think I was looking at a threat for power level 12 characters or power level 11 characters. So, you know, I'm like, oh no, turn it up to 11. You know, it's like turn the volume up on these guys. But
you didn't have to tell me twice. Cause...
No. we got the second draft, and we're like, oh, now that's scary.
they're awesome. A very scary bunch. They some of them have powers that are going to make players hate their game masters, and they should just pass it back to me, because I'll take the hit for that one.
All right. Well, unfortunately, Alex can't continue gushing about the artwork or talking about the artwork because we can't seem to raise him again. Skype is giving us issues. But I'm going to continue talking with Rick here for a few moments about Six Gun. But I also really quickly wanted to interject on Alex's behalf that not only is he working on the Black Chapter cover and the artwork for the Metas project, but I do hope to have him on a couple of other projects coming up here very soon, and you know, we will be showcasing a lot of his stuff, and hopefully he can join us again on a future podcast when we can have him and Dan Houser on as well, because it was it's going to be interesting to see the two of them combine their talents. But thanks again to Alex Williamson for joining us, and I'm going to keep talking with Rick as long as his wife lets him stay up. But going back to Six Gun, now you had actually delivered most of the content, and then you stepped back, you know, and then I brought you back like a month or two later to flesh it out. How difficult was it to come back and add to that project? I mean, was that something that you were like, oh God, I got to do this again, or...
No, a lot of it was stuff that I wanted to have included, but didn't have the space for originally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bad about going over. So in my notes, I had, you know, they should have a fixer, and they should have a safe house written up, and they should have, you know, maybe I hadn't really been too clear about the pilot. I was a big fan back in the day of Suicide Squad. They had a helicopter which looked pretty much like Airwolf, and a pilot who would fly them around on their missions. And so Night Witch is kind of an homage to Briscoe, was the pilot's name, and Sheba was the helicopter.
Hmm.
And
I did not remember those characters even having, or the characters having names, or the helicopter having names. I remember the books, but I did not remember those details.
Yeah, and the bit on private military contractors was something we had discussed, if, you know, for the first draft, if space allowed, and I had really wanted to do what I call the full Chris McLaughlin on like military mercenary heroes and villains, and so I was able to put a section in there talking about heroes and villains for hire, you know, starting with Luke Cage, and mentioning a lot of the things like the Suicide Squad and Secret Six and folks like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really useful to me as far as reading through the manuscript. It really occurred to me that, you know, drawing those parallels for readers is going to help them kind of place their heads in the right territory when they want to use these characters. You know, it's like, here's some examples of how, you know, comic books where this kind of thing pops up. And I've noticed that at least before the New 52, a lot of the DC books that I really gravitated towards were the military aspects, the ones that or the military or the police units where as well. I mean, I was a big fan of Greg Rucka, so maybe that had a lot.
Yeah, there was Gotham Central and Checkmate.
And I can't think of some others, but I think there was one where they had a special, almost like DC's version of Stargate, where it was a group of soldiers who would investigate alien phenomena.
The Creature Commandos. That was a they did a spin on the old Weird War Tales comic, the Creature Commandos, who back in the old days were an actual werewolf and a guy who had been blown up by a hand grenade and was stitched together and looked like Frankenstein. And they retooled that idea of monster soldiers and brought back the Creature Commandos for that. And they're doing something like that in the Frankenstein Agent of Shade thing, as I understand it. I haven't looked at that. I confess, the only parts of the New 52 I followed have been the ones written by Grant Morrison, because I'll follow him pretty much anywhere.
Well, I have to say, without naming names, another friend of mine told me that the New 52 was kind of his perfect jumping off point for. It was like, this is the great opportunity to stop reading.
Because
all the things I care about are stopping.
Yeah, said the same thing. They're like, oh, well, the characters I've cared about are now these unrecognizable folks. So, you know, I don't need to read about the Teen Titans anymore because that ain't them. And I'll just watch Young Justice over and over again. And
and yes, I still haven't finished the first season of Young Justice, but hopefully the Blu-ray will come out in a month or so here.
Oh my God, the second season is so good.
Is it?
Yes.
See, I haven't even finished the first. but I can't wait for I really like the way the characters are developing, and I like the way they handled Superboy and Superman, and to me, those were very iconic versions of the characters. The one character I don't think they handled very well was the Joker. I think they had some conflicts of interest in how that character was meant to be handled. I don't necessarily blame the actor, because actors do what they're told. So if they're
right, yeah, they gave Brent Spiner the lines and the direction, and I'm guessing he gave them what they asked for.
Yeah. But, I mean, that was just a terrible version of the character. It was like it was written for Mark Hamill. I mean, it had the kind of bombastic lines, but he was reading them as Heath Ledger.
Mm-hmm.
And
he was very Heath Ledger in the performance.
Yeah, it just did not mix. The two just don't work together. You have to write lines for that kind of character. You can't write overstated dialogue and have it be an understated performance.
Mm-hmm.
So that just was a terrible directing choice there. I don't understand how that happened in the middle of so many other good choices, but I guess everybody makes at least one mistake. But the rest of the show I really loved. I loved the way they developed the characters and the story and the setting. I really liked seeing, you know, younger versions of some of the classic heroes like Zatara. And you know, I think Zatanna had just shown up in one of the last episodes I've seen so far. So, looking forward to seeing more episodes with her. Anyway, sidetracked there. also, really disappointed to hear that they're ending the Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes cartoon.
Oh, that just tears me up, because yeah. I am loving that show.
Yeah, it's like, wow, they finally got a Marvel show that I like as much as a DC show. and then they decide to switch it off. I'm like, what? Anyway.
Yeah. Grumble, grumble, grumble.
Grumble, 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 grumble. So, Hopefully, you've actually delivered a pitch on another project that we're looking at. I haven't had a chance to really go over it with you in person, but there's some Silver Age stuff that you'd wanted to do, and I do want to focus on, you know, because I've some of the bigger projects that I've done with Vigilance so far have kind of left that Silver Age feel behind and gone a little more on the gritty side, despite, you know, sometimes the artwork notwithstanding, but the, you know, like the Octoberman and Black Chapter and Six Gun all have a very serious gritty edge to them. So one of the things that's going to be nice for people is when Jason Tondreau's Forgotten Five comes up. We've got the artwork popping in for that one as well. Jesse Justice is handling the art on that. And once we get that, we'll also start looking at a project for you, which we had some ideas about doing I don't want to talk too much about it because we haven't made all the decisions yet, but I really wanted to really wanted to indulge in this one because I guess a good way to describe it might be like the Babylon 5 for superheroes. Is that
yeah,
fair?
Yeah, that's good. I don't want to say too much, but yeah, it's big time cosmic.
Yeah.
Fun and goodness.
So that's definitely something that I've always been interested in, and I love the cosmic scale of adventures that take place in space. As anyone who listened to my Big Green Lantern actual play podcast last year, where the players picked Green Lanterns, except for one player playing Superman, and, you know, I had them trying to rescue a train that travels from one end of a wormhole to the other, and it was just, you know, my idea of doing a cosmic story is basically taking something that you would see in the real world and just throwing it in space. Mm-hmm. So that's my idea of it. I mean, it's a little simplified, but it's really fun. I love the Taneori Express.
Yeah, so. And this at least in the, you know, that gets name dropped in what I sent you.
Yep. So we might include that in this treatment. We'll have to see what the scale of it becomes, but I definitely expect we're going to hear a lot more from you, as long as you're willing to put up with our stuff. Because I had a lot of fun working on the Six Gun project, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what we can put together next. So, looking forward to that. Are there any other projects that you're working on right now that you wanted to name drop or to mention, shout out?
Well, I did just start a gaming blog called Rick's Game Room. At ricksgameroom.blogspot.com. So far, I've just been posting Marvel Heroic role-playing character write-ups because those are easy and fast to do, and it's, you know, a little fun project I can work on like once a day. Feel free to check that out. There will be other content there eventually as well, but that's what I've been posting. Little character write-ups. I did, I did Commander Shepard from Mass Effect and Harry Dresden, and yesterday for the 4th of July, I wrote up the old Batman and the Outsiders villain group, the Force of July, and I'm going to start on the PS2 38 characters next, and yeah, check it out.
Awesome. Well, yeah, send me that link, and I will include that in the description for the podcast, and that way people can jump straight to your site. And
sure thing.
So for everybody else, thanks again, Alex Williamson, for stopping in for at least part of the show, and I really appreciate your time, Rick. And of course, Rick is also in our Beacon City podcast, but you're not going to make this weekend's show, right?
Yeah, you're recording on my son's birthday, and he and I have a date at Brick Fiesta, a Lego convention. Where,
oh, fantastic! Take pictures.
Gonna be, yes. Oh, the stuff people make there is pretty awesome. I will happily send you pictures.
Yes, I love Legos. I of course I don't have room for them anymore in my life, as far as toys, but if I had a room for toys, it would be mostly Lego.
Yeah, me too.
Which reminds me of Kid Awesome-tastic. Did you see the sketch that Alex did?
Yes, I love it. It's great.
that's a piece that Rick contributed to our Metas project. It's basically a guy, and he's building a power armor suit out of Legos. It's fantastic.
Well, the idea was a little kid was offered a wish, and he's like, well, I could wish for superpowers, or I could wish for all the Legos I ever wanted. Hey, I'll do both at once. And so he wished for Lego superpowers.
And that's just a fantastic idea. So not everything you do is dark and gritty.
Oh, no. I'm a very silly person, actually.
It's wonderful. All right. So, again, thank you very much, Rick, for joining us. Thank you, Alex, for joining us. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. I'm going to try and splice all these pieces together into some kind of coherent whole and get that posted for you in the next couple of hours. Until this weekend, we should be running this weekend, we should be recording a new Beacon City podcast. So look forward to that. And so until next time, everyone listening, thank you. And stay vigilant.
Stay vigilant.